This is interviewing Ben Yapley at NRL, 30 September 1971.
Okay, what I'm interested in is just the beginnings of NRL radar, and you know, so any personal stories or anything that cannot be gotten out of publications and so forth. Well, first of all, what was the earliest astronomical sort of radar done? Was it bouncing off the moon? Was that the first thing?
With the radar stuff?
Yeah.
You see, the history goes back with Hagen tried to look at the moon real early before I ever tried it.
About
2 years before I was successful.
And what year was this?
I would say 55, 50. In that era.
Using the 50-foot?
Using the 50-foot, and the guy that was trying to do that was David Chase, who since left NRL. He had an 8-millimeter Maggie, I believe it was, and he was chopping by sweeping the horn off and on, because there's this 2-second delay, so he had the feed
actually
horn.
Moving the horn.
He actually moved the feed horn back and forth. But at 8 millimeter, he was never successful. And then about that time, let's see.
What was the interest in this? Was it was the Navy have a military interest, or was it just purely scientific?
No, the object.
The distance to the moon, or
yeah, it was both for astrometry, and both possibly using it as a navigational reference. And at the top.
That was the Navy's main interest.
For navigation.
Yeah.
Because at that time there was, I still think there is, not a very good navigational system on a worldwide global basis. And the object was, I think, to establish a better means of navigation. And
now, had anyone bounced radar off the moon?
At that time?
Yeah.
Yeah, Trextra had already done it.
Was he the first one? Or?
No, I think you have to go back to DeWitt and Stodola from Australia. They did it first. It was 38 mega cycles or something.
And
like
what
that.
Year was this about?
53, wasn't it?
In the early 50s.
Yeah, early 50s. And then after that, I'm not quite sure whether they came first now or Project Diana of Fort Monmouth came first. One used a bed spring array. And the Australians used the TV or broadcast station after working hours. They would look at the horizon. And again, their work, as you may or may not remember, is that the theory says that it's a rough scatter, so therefore it doesn't make any difference as to whether you use a long or short pulse, you can have a long pulse return. And Trexler is a guy that found out that the moon was not rough.
And this was approximately when?
Gosh, I don't know.
This is a couple of years before you got started,
yeah.
Anyway.
But my point was to go at a higher frequency, not the frequency that Trexler went. So, after Chase left here, the job was given over to me. And instead of going to the 8-millimeter concept, I went to the brute force concept using a 2-megawatt S-band radar, an APS 20E modified. And it took some doing, months of getting ready. And it was in February, I think.
Of what year?
57, yeah. I got the first echo. And it was reported, I think, the month after at a AAS meeting, but with no photographs. And I don't think at that time the world was aware that the moon was specular at the center portion. They now are aware, but
yeah.
At that time it was. And not long thereafter, I think it was Jordan Bank also got the reflections from the moon. And from then on, all kinds of games were being played.
Well, before we go on further, were there any particular incidents or stories connected with
first time you got an echo? I mean, do you remember that? Or was it something that just sort of eventually happened slowly? Or was it as soon as you turned the equipment on, you know, or how did that work?
It's funny. It's the first time we turned it on, pointed at the moon, we got the echo. That was really amazing. And it was on a Sunday morning, I believe it was. And we were so happy. McLean and we all went out. Mac bought us breakfast. So.
Couldn't buy booze on Sunday morning.
Yeah, Sunday morning. I remember eating at the hot shop up there. As he went up there and got it. But it came through. There was no doubt about it because you could sit there.
The delay, I guess.
Yeah, there's two ways we were testing it. One, we changed the repetition rate. And when you change the repetition rate that was out in space to the ones you're going now are at a different period. So they would be walking across the screen until the new repetition rate came back.
Right.
The other method was to turn the echo off, the transmitter off, and echo keeps staying there for 2 seconds.
Good answer.
And then turn it on again. And it was just
pretty sure.
No ifs, ands, and buts about it. I think a lot of credit should be given to Craig in helping putting the system together because it took us a long time when we were putting the radar together. We found out that there was there's a high voltage cable we had to put up there. And I'd never heard of this before, but it had conducting rubber. Conducting rubber. And you had to disconnect or peel back that conducting rubber before you put the high voltage connector on, otherwise it'd arc the conducting rubber. To this day, I still can't forget that. We fought that thing for days. You know the old saying, when everything else failed, read the books, I guess. But there wasn't very many books for that particular connector.
So then the research after that went into the topography of the moon, is that correct?
Yeah. Then the next step was we realized that if you're going to have navigation, the uncertainties in range affects your measurement directly. And the two things we didn't know was what was the radius of the moon and then what was the topography affecting. In other words, the radius, the mean radius plus the topography plus the mean distance affects the ability to establish a position on Earth. So we went toward after the mean distance of which affects the equatorial radius, which we got, which was different from the Hayford and the Huff ellipsoid.
Well, how much different term?
See, the Hayford is...
Was it outside their error bars?
No. I don't know what the error bars on the Huff and the Hayford sphere. The Hayford was 388, the last three significant numbers. The Huff was 270. I think we end up with 167.
Let me ask something else I should have asked before. Was this the highest frequency
at that time,
moon radar had been detected? Yeah. At that time?
So, what else? That was different. Yeah, the radius of the Earth, we needed the mean distance to get the radius of the Earth, or we need the radius of the Earth to get the mean distance. Because it's the radius of the Earth over the sine of the parallax.
Yeah. Now, you said radius of the moon. You need that, too.
Yeah, well, you had to assume...
You had to have both.
Yeah, you had to use the optical methods to determine what the radius of the moon was.
Yeah.
But we had hope that by signal processing, plot the contour this way, and at least get the radius of the center mass, but the funding got cut off before we got that far. So we never really finished that job. And...
This was work done in the early 60s.
Yeah. The other thing that I think is an interest that we never really got a lot of credit for, and that is we suspected mascons before the orbiters. If you remember the Lunar Bulge paper that Shapiro presented at a dedication in his building, you may or may not remember that.
No, I wasn't here at that.
And we,
that year.
We intimated that the main...
What was your evidence for that?
Be the
fact that the moon was wobbling a little bit.
The radiuses don't fit to the topography.
I see.
And
you mean it's not maximum radius in the mountainous regions?
And that sort of thing. So as we plotted contours of the moon, you know, over the ground tracks, it, to get it to fit right. This gives a suspicion that there were depths of the thing. Later on, when the orbiter went around, the mascots were confirmed.
Yeah, yeah.
And they showed the... We couldn't prove it. It was kind of hairy way to
show. Where was this published, this thing by Shapiro?
This published in the... dedication booklet.
But is it anywhere in the journal?
It's not in the journal anymore.
Oh.
But that was published before the MassCon ever came.
Dedication of the Space Science Building, yeah. 69 or something.
Something like that. Yeah.
68, I guess.
And later on it was confirmed. That's... Yeah, that's about... Yeah, after that, then JPL got in the picture. And
Haystack. You never tried the planets?
Yeah, we did try the planets, but by the time we were able to do the planets, Haystack beat us with much superior equipment.
Yeah.
Well, we got kind of got fouled up with EK in the equipment, contracting. Ended up we had to build it ourselves. And I think we should have built it ourselves in the beginning. You know, any of these specialized things you should build yourself. I don't think that we're such great builders, but you're like radiometers, you're more careful from what the critical things are.
Mm. Is there anything else now in any topic that you can think of that might be of general interest? I mean, even maybe you weren't involved in it, but how you saw it as an outsider here in the branch, or...
Well, the other one is, was it... that S-band communication between England and Archie Strayton in Texas, that's not everyone's aware of. They took pulses and sent from the moon to the...
Oh, I see.
Yeah. We did the same thing between here and Stanford through Bracewell's...
And what year is this about?
God, I don't remember what year it was. Oh, who's that? See, that's a long time ago.
Which is the first one, the Texas-England one, or...?
The chronology, I can't remember now whether we did it before that or not. But we went from here to the moon to Stanford, Bracewell's.
This must have been in the early 60s.
Yeah, really.
61 or 2 or...
We never published this stuff. I'm trying to think of the guy who got his doctorate out there.
At Stanford?
Yeah, within the Bracewell. He's now at University of California under Weaver. He was working with us on that. At the time, I thought he was a professional graduate.
Welch?
No. Heavyset guy. I can't think of his name. For the love of me right now. It took him a long time to get his doctorate, though. He finally got it, but...
Oh, I think I'll turn this off. Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, that ends the interview with Ben Yapley at NRL, 30 September 1971. Now we start with Connie Mayer.